So welcome to the 50th episode. It's the Golden Jubilee. We've reached quinquagenarian status, which is when a person is between 50 and 59. But in this case, we're talking about a podcast. And to celebrate this inauspicious occasion, I went and got a couple of Flying Dutchmen today at In-N-Out, which is basically like two just beef patties and cheese, nothing else. It's like a beef drone strike. I used to get the lettuce wrap thing, but then I figured I would just cut out the bullshit, cut out the middleman. I generally would get like two of them. I once got four, and I did finish them all, but I felt like I was going to die afterwards. Alas, I did not die. I mean, at this point, it's going to take a lot more than some Flying Dutchmen to take me down. And the Flying Dutchman is actually a legendary ghost ship that supposedly was never able to dock. It was just like doomed to sail the sea forever. And, you know, I have sympathy for that ship. I'm perennially unsettled, mentally and physically, and somewhat unable to actually settle down. Though this move to Los Angeles within the next few months should be the final voyage. At least I'll be physically settled at that point. The mental part is a work in progress. And, of course, a long overdue birthday greeting to my man Stacy Keach. He turned 83 on June 2nd. I hope he's doing well. So kick back, pour yourself a whiskey, and watch a Mike Hammer episode and just luxuriate in the comfortable corniness of it all. And a good Mike Hammer episode title would actually be 80 Proof Couch. Or alternatively, What's Under the Fridge? Which describes a couple of habits of mine. First off, I don't know if it's because I'm always in a rush or clumsy or perhaps both, but I'm always dropping shit in my kitchen, like usually pills or vitamins, and they somehow almost always bounce off the floor and they like directly go under the fridge, as if sucked in there by some unknown forces, almost like scoring a goal in air hockey. And shit, playing air hockey makes me so nervous. But then again, everything makes me nervous. And then I often will like tip over a can of White Claw or wine or whatever on my couch, usually after I've had a couple of drinks. And it's like, how many times can I continue to do that? But yeah, between the alcohol in the couch and the pills and stuff under the fridge, the next person that moves in here is going to be able to have a first-class party here. And as Julia Child once said, a party without a cake is really just a meeting. I would maybe throw in alcohol to that quote. But I loved you, Julia. So let's begin. And to quote the philosopher Seneca, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
You are my density. You are my density.
And as we begin, let's mention a clever quote from Orson Welles. If you want a happy ending, that depends, of course, on where you stop your story. I like that, Orson, and hopefully he wasn't talking about a hand job. Happy ending, get it? And quickly, one of my listeners, Tommy Bojangles, wrote in to me with a question. He said, hey, Mark, when do you know when it's time to wash your towels? Well, first off, I've always said my listeners have an intelligence of the highest caliber. But to answer your question, Tommy, I wash my towels right when they start smelling like the inside of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland. That's a rule to live by. So yeah, the Olympics happened. I saw Tom Cruise did a little deal at the ending where he jumped into the arena and then took off on a motorcycle. And Tom Cruise, I dare say, is trying just a bit too hard to remain youthful. I mean, he doesn't look absolutely horrible, but he's had quite a bit of stuff done and fillers and stuff, and he almost looks like an artificial and like intelligence like version of Tom Cruise. I mean, you got to be subtle when you have work done. Less is way more, so that you'll still look natural and normal, you know? And the guy's hair is like completely science fiction. Talk about hairline impossible. I mean, there's been some clear transplant action or something. It's like when he's jumping from the fucking sky, he still has the straightest hairline and so much hair, straighter hair than he had in Risky Business. I mean, you lose some of your hair, we're all losing it. And does anyone remember the not-great comedy Losing It from 1983, directed by Curtis Hanson with Tom Cruise and Shelley Long? Tom Cruise and his teenage buddies drive down to Tijuana. Jesus, I probably saw it in 1987. I don't remember a damn thing. But Tom, baby, I know you listen to this podcast. Just loosen the reins up a bit on the de-aging stuff. You don't want to end up like Nicole Kidman with a frozen face, unable to express any emotions. The best acting is done in the creases, the lines, the imperfections. Embrace it. And speaking of the Olympics, I watched a little bit of it, but I had heard they had breakdancing this year, and I was a bit intrigued. So I checked it out, and holy shit, breaking has evolved. These guys are more like gymnasts. I mean, some of the moves they make are like outlandish feats of strength, almost like video game characters or something. I didn't see a lot of popping, which I love, but the backspins and the move I used to call the gyro has gotten so advanced. I used to breakdance really badly in the 1980s in my parents' garage on a piece of cardboard. I would spin on my back okay, but I couldn't do much. I tried to like caterpillar a couple times, and I would always like hit my groin area and stuff, so I stopped that. I was a bit better at the popping part of breaking, but never really good. There was this mythical guy at my junior high who was like the best at popping. He was advanced, my man, and he had the best name ever, Tron. I used to love the movie Tron from 1982 with Jeff Bridges and Bruce Boxleitner. And this was in the most hardcore part of my autograph collecting habit. And I actually wrote the guy, Dan Shore, who actually had like a bit part in the movie. He did send me an autograph, though, which I still have. So, Dan Shore, I hope you are good. Surely you are. Terrible joke, sorry. And I really loved playing the video game Discs of Tron from 1983, where you kind of throw discs like Hi-Li style, trying to knock your opponent off. Going to video game arcades was a highlight of my youth. There was an animated Laserdisc game called Dragon's Lair from also 1983 by the animator Don Bluth, which basically was a ton of animated sequences where you're the goofy, clumsy Dirk the Daring, a knight trying to rescue Princess Daphne. You basically just kind of move them, you know, down, left to right, or up and down, or whatever, and you use the buttons to kind of use your sword. And Jesus, if you make a few errors, man, it's game over. I eventually got to the point where I killed the dragon and I won the game. It took me endless quarters, and it was basically just memorization, but it was a thrill nonetheless. Its slightly more advanced follow-up in 1983 was Space Ace, also by Don Bluth, where you play Ace, who's battling the evil Borf, who wants to turn all humans into infants and take over the planet. It was pretty damn fun. I also was able to win at that game. Ah, our young, pliable brains. And yeah, to wrap it up on Breakin', who can forget the movie Breakin' from 1984, are you seeing a pattern here? With Shabadoo and Boogaloo Shrimp as our two main breakdancers, with a classically trained dancer played by the kinda hot Lucinda Dickey. She joins them to defeat a rival game of breakdancers. Ice-T is also in the movie. Its sequel, also from 1984, holy shit, they busted out that sequel quick, has the immortal title Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. And just to end the breakdancing talk here, I remember back in the 80s, I wanted to buy these goofy parachute pants so bad with all these zippers and shit. There was some funky store in the Sun Valley Mall where I grew up, and I would always like go into the store several times on several different days, and I would try them on, walk around in them, look in the mirror, and I was like, God, these are kind of cool, but dude, you know you're never going to wear these. And so I was smart for once and didn't buy them. One of my absolute stupidest purchases was like that electrode plasma ball thing from the Sharper Image. You put your finger on it and the electricity will like go to your wherever your finger is, you know. It was cool for like an hour. But hey, you know, you live and learn, right? Okay, let's change the tone here briefly. So I was going to the grocery store and there was this homeless guy sitting there kind of looking downward, you know, kind of sad. He was dirty, smelled real bad. And he wasn't looking at me or anything, but I can't just help myself when I see people like that. I can't just walk past them. So I asked him, hey, can I get you anything from the store to eat? He said, okay, a sandwich. So I got him a sandwich and a soda and a water. He asked for my name. He said it was K. And I said, like, K-A-Y? And he said, no, just like the letter K. But there was just like such a sad, defeated, hopeless look in his eyes. He asked if I knew where he could find a job. And I was like, man, shit, I don't know, man. I'm sure that's kind of hard. He asked if there was like any errands or whatever he could do for me. And I was like, well, man, I live alone. I don't really need much. But I felt kind of bad for him not being able to do more for him. And I don't care how someone becomes homeless. Yes, sometimes it's by their actions, sometimes not. But who cares ultimately? It's like right now they're struggling, they're homeless. And we just kind of get used to the casual cruelties and inhumanities of daily life. And most people just kind of try and shut it out. But generally, I can't. If I see someone struggling, it's like I can afford to give someone 10 bucks or whatever. I mean, I can't help everyone, but I try my best. Every homeless person was a little kid at some point with hopes and dreams. And it always tears me up a little bit when I see people like that. And maybe this guy K thinks no one in the world was thinking about him that day, but I was. And there's a new guy at my apartment that just moved in. He's kind of a big, disheveled guy. And he was outside waiting for DoorDash. We introduced ourselves. He said, yeah, I'm usually at work or at home. I have no friends. And I was kind of like, God damn, we're all struggling in some way. A lot of us are alone, waiting for our fucking Amazon package or DoorDash and then quickly back into our apartments. And don't get me started on how technology has ruined our lives, but I recently saw Mark Zuckerberg has been like growing out his hair and wearing expensive hip $500 t-shirts. And it's like, dude, just stop it. Stick with the computers. You're not cool. You'll never be cool. You've ruined our world, so just enjoy your billions and fuck off. Do your jujitsu with Joe Rogan, another completely unfunny bore who, like Zuckerberg, thinks he's smarter than he is. Zuckerberg used his technologically savvy to get his revenge on a world that rejected him, and he fucked everything up in the process. He's uninteresting, he probably has no empathy for others, and I'm rooting for his downfall. Along with Elon Musk, the absolute king of the blowhard bores, there's nothing worse than someone who thinks they're clever and isn't. Yes, he's hyper-intelligent in some ways, but Elon, you aren't funny. You have no concept of comedy. Maybe your jokes would land on Mars, but they aren't working on Earth. The only reason people tolerate you is because of your power and your wealth. Your humor is as bad as your fake-ass hair transplant. And I'm already bored just talking about you. And pivoting to my work at the psych hospital, it's funny, right around when we're starting to change shifts, I swear the patients are aware of it. But I've already worked almost 12 hours. I'm off at 7 p.m. I'm exhausted as shit. And a patient at 6:45 will come up to me and like ask for shower supplies or like a DVD player and a DVD to watch. It's like night shift is starting in 15 minutes. I've been here for 11 hours and 45 minutes. Now you have requests? Sometimes I think it's kind of a passive-aggressive thing for some patients to kind of trying to use their power, but sometimes it's sincere and I try to help them out. But other times I'm like, hey man, just wait a few minutes. Next shift will get to you, okay? I do my best at work, but I'm not going to destroy myself in the process. I'm destroying myself perfectly well outside of work. Thank you very much. And speaking of destroying myself at work, I have the special and completely unwanted ability to like injure myself with the most innocuous items. I was making someone some coffee and somehow when I put the lid on, like an everyday coffee cup lid, I scraped my finger against the side when closing it and sliced my finger, you know, quite a bit. And cuts on the finger are just the worst. But who cuts themselves on a coffee lid? It reminded me of the time I was in the dining area at some editorial facility. I was like gesturing. I tend to gesture a lot. And I slammed my hand against a goddamn chafing dish, kind of right underneath one of my knuckles. I still have a fairly prominent scar from that. At one time, I was walking into some fancy little chocolate shop on Wilshire Boulevard. I opened the door. Yes, just opened the door and somehow hit like the side of it and something and sliced the crap out of my finger. It was bleeding fairly badly. The owner was like Swiss or something. He was like, oh my God, what happened? That wasn't a Swiss accent, but what can I do? I was like, I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm just like, while I'm bleeding all over the place, I just asked for a few napkins, put some pressure on it. And then I was like, can I have 3 chocolate truffles? Speaking of Julia Child again, that scene was reminiscent of the funny The French Chef skit where Dan Aykroyd plays Julia Child cutting into some food and slices her finger by accident. And he's like, oh, now I've done it. I've cut the dickens out of my finger. And just starts profusely squirting blood and eventually ends up collapsing. I gotta be honest, I've never been a Dan Aykroyd fan per se, but the skit is funny. Well, let's end this short episode with a movie and a song. You know, I've kind of grown to really like today's version of Russell Crowe. He's been through hell, he's a bit ravaged, a bit bloated, but the guy is just undeniably a great actor. I mean, he's got a soulfulness, and I like him even better now that he's kind of damaged looking, you know? I mean, if life doesn't kind of wreck you kind of mentally and physically a bit along the way, then you really didn't live. It's like you didn't take enough chances. There's no point in leaving a good-looking corpse. But yeah, he's been doing some kind of straight-to-streaming movies, which used to be called straight-to-video for you youngsters out there. But sometimes his movies get a theatrical release. And the one I recently watched was The Exorcism from 2024, where he plays a troubled actor with some serious demons, pardon the pun. It's kind of one of those movies where they're like shooting a movie in it. And they're kind of shooting a loose remake of The Exorcist. Russell Crowe plays a priest, and his estranged daughter is kind of starting to get worried about him, wondering if he's falling back into addiction or if there's something more evil at play. The daughter is played by kind of a great Ryan Simpkins, and Frasier's David Hyde Pierce plays an actual priest who's brought on to consult on the movie. The movie is decent. It ain't great, but Russell Crowe is pretty solid in it, just kind of world-weary, but man, what a soulful actor. The movie has its moments. The climax kind of sucks, but I would say check it out, especially if it sounds appealing to you. And I will be on the lookout for Russell Crowe's next movies. He's joining my beloved Guy Pearce, another one of those guys, you knew I was going to do that, that I will watch almost anything with him in it. And okay, yeah, I usually tend to like less mainstream songs, but you know what? I heard some Alanis Morissette recently, and I was like, wow, what a couple cool songs she has. I don't love all of the 1995 song Head Over Feet from her album Jagged Little Pill, but goddamn, it's got a catchy, great little chorus. And I know a lot of her songs are about her experiences and relationships, and yes, this song was inspired by her torrid affair with me. Of course, I'm kidding. But hey, check out the chorus, man. It's really nicely done. You've already won me over, in spite of me. Don't be alarmed if I fall head over feet. And don't be surprised if I love you for all that you are. I couldn't help it. It's all your fault. But there's this nice little part where it goes from like a B minor to a B flat. It just sounds really nice. It's, don't be alarmed if I fall. And then goes to the B flat. Head over feet. It's a really nice little part. But of course, her knockout song is You Oughta Know. Just a great song. Yes, I love Pavement. Yes, I love Guided by Voices. But if a song is good, I don't care if it's super mainstream. Not liking something just because it's mainstream is kind of stupid. Yes, a lot or most mainstream stuff is pretty crap. But come on, what an awesome song, righteously kind of angry and supposedly inspired by her relationship with the doofus actor, Dave Coulier. And man, if this song doesn't get you fired up, you may be dead. The whole song is pretty good, but the chorus knocks me out. And just a line that she says, does she know that you told me you'd hold me until you died, till you died, but you're still alive, is so amazing. Anyway, here's a little of that, and thank you for listening to the 50th episode. And every time you speak her name, does she know how you told me you'd hold me until you died, but you're still alive, and I'm here to remind you of the mess you left when you went away. It's not fair to deny me of the cross I bear that you gave to me. You ought to know.